Good morning. This is Luma Digest. I'm Noura. So here is a question that is going to matter a lot in the next decade. When AI automates big chunks of existing work, who actually gets the new jobs that emerge? Because here is the thing. New jobs do emerge. They always have. But who fills them is not random. And MIT just published research this week that shows exactly how this pattern has played out for the past 70 years. Let me walk you through what they found. MIT labor economist David Auter and his team went back through decades of US employment data. What they discovered is this. When new types of work show up because of technological change, college graduates under 30 in urban areas capture most of it. In 1950, about 7% of workers held jobs that did not exist in 1930. By 2020, that number had grown to 18%, so roughly 1 in 5 jobs now involves work that emerged in the past 50 years. But the pattern is consistent across all of it. Expertise concentrates first among the young and educated. There is a wage premium at the start, but it fades over time as the skill becomes common knowledge. Think about that for a second. Driving a car was scarce expertise once. Using Microsoft Word was too. Then both became baseline. Everyone learned. The premium disappeared. What really stood out to me in this research is the role of demand. The findings show that government-backed investment, like the manufacturing build-out during World War II, created enormous waves of new specialized work, which suggests that how we deploy AI is not predetermined. We can choose to automate jobs away, or we can create new layers of skilled work around AI systems. One path kills employment, the other creates it. The takeaway? If you are hiring, if you are building systems, if you are shaping policy, you are making that choice right now. The jobs that emerge around AI will not distribute evenly. History says they will concentrate among the young, the educated, the urban. Unless we deliberately build different pathways in, worth thinking about for your own organization, right? Okay, so completely different corner of the tech world now, but stay with me. AWS just did something quietly useful. SageMaker, Amazon's machine learning platform, now speaks OpenAI's language. What that means in practice is this. You can swap an OpenAI endpoint URL for a SageMaker one. No SDK rewrites, no custom authentication wrappers. Your existing LangChain agents, your Versal AI SDK code, your OpenAI client patterns, they just work. This matters because it removes the "we are different" tax. Teams running inference on their own infrastructure no longer have to carry the burden of custom integrations. Deploy a model to SageMaker, point your code at it, and you are done. It is one of those changes that sounds boring until you have spent 3 days debugging a custom wrapper for the fifth time. Then it sounds brilliant. And here is why the timing is interesting. This is not Amazon being generous. This is Amazon recognizing that OpenAI's API has become the de facto standard. If you want developers to run models on your infrastructure, you need to meet them where their code already is. The pattern here is infrastructure bending toward developer habits, not the other way around. That is always a good sign. Right, let's talk about Anthropic for a minute. The company behind Claude, the AI safety-focused competitor to OpenAI, just projected something interesting. They expect to hit $10.9 billion in revenue by the second quarter of 2026. That is more than double their previous quarterly figures, and they are calling it first profitable quarter incoming. Now, I am not going to pretend revenue projections are gospel, but what this signals is that the market for AI models is maturing fast. Companies are paying real money. Not pilot budgets, not proof of concept budgets, real deployment money. The interesting bit here is the safety angle. Anthropic has positioned itself as the cautious alternative, slower releases, more conservative safety testing, constitutional AI, all of that. And the fact that they are hitting profitability while maintaining that stance, that is worth noting. It suggests you do not have to be first and fastest to win. You can be deliberate and still capture market share. Whether they actually hit those numbers remains to be seen. But the signal is clear. Businesses are spending serious money on AI now. The pilot phase is over. Let's pivot to builders for a minute. This one is for anyone who has ever stared at an uptime monitor and thought, I could do this better. A developer just shipped Pingboard. It is an uptime monitor with built-in status pages. The stack is Convex, Clark for auth, Resend for emails, and Lemon Squeezy for payments in regions where Stripe does not operate. What stood out to me is the real-time bit. Convex gives you reactive queries out of the box, which means the status page updates live as soon as a service goes down. No polling, no refresh button, it just updates. The other clever bit is heartbeat monitoring for background workers. You can set up a cron job to ping an endpoint every X minutes. If it misses a beat, you get an alert. Simple, effective. This is one of those projects that feels very, I built this because the existing tools annoyed me. And honestly, some of the best tools come from that place. Someone gets frustrated enough to just build the thing they wish existed. If you have ever dealt with Uptime Robot's interface and found it cluttered, you will appreciate what this developer is going for. Clean, fast, real time, nothing extra, right. One more from the Builder's Corner, and this one is a proper war story. A developer just wrote up their experience shipping a progressive web app to Google Play as a trusted web activity. For anyone not familiar, a TWA is basically a way to wrap a PWA in an Android shell so it can live in the Play Store. The post is honest about what went wrong. Most of the time lost was debugging certificate fingerprint mismatches, the assetlinks.json file that Google uses to verify your app. It is very picky about matching your signing keys. Get one character wrong and the whole thing fails silently. The other gotcha is Google's 14-day closed testing requirement. You cannot just publish straight to production. You have to run a closed test with at least 20 testers for 2 weeks first, which is fine if you know about it, less fine if you are expecting to ship today. The takeaway here is not that TWAs are hard. It is that the documentation does not always match reality, and when you are debugging, the error messages are not always helpful. But here is the good bit. Once it works, it works. Your PWA is now a native app as far as users are concerned. Push notifications, home screen icon, the whole experience. And you are maintaining one code base, not separate web and native apps. If you are considering this path for your own project, read the post. It will save you a few days of confusion. So, stepping back from all of that, here is what I keep coming back to. The thread running through today's edition is infrastructure and access. Who gets access to new jobs when AI reshapes work? Who gets access to clean APIs when cloud platforms decide to play nice? Who gets access to the Play Store when Google's rules are opaque? Infrastructure shapes opportunity. And right now, we are building the infrastructure that will shape the next decade. Something to think about on the commute this morning. And that is your Luma Digest for today. Thanks for being here. I will see you next time.